city where everyone was a little boy.
Huh. It has a dancer, it has a stand-up comedian, and it has an Oscar-nominated actress, and it might be the worst piece of shit ever made, but I guess we'll find out. This week's episode of BGM, Bad Gay Movies, Bitchy Gay Men. I am your co-host, Bill Antonio, and with me is...
Your co-host, Daniel Krolik.
And...
Michael Soulard.
And we are going to discuss the film... What's it called?
The Wishmasters.
Yeah.
Three.
The Wishmakers, which is available on
Netflix. The Wishmasters is gay hard science fiction.
Yeah. Right.
Not soft science fiction, right. Hard science fiction.
Which is available on Netflix and is directed by David Grotel, who this is his only feature, and there's a number of shorts on his IMDb, short films, of course.
Yeah.
And that's all my notes. I don't have anything else. I couldn't find any reviews. There's no rating on Rotten Tomatoes. There's no reviews anywhere that I could find. Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that it is a rather recent film. It premiered at the Boston LGBT Film Festival in May of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because it didn't get into the competition at Cannes.
Which it's so shocking to me that this is from 2011.
Yeah,
it feels older and more dated. Oh, it does. There are some scenes which feel super out of date.
Everything.
It actually feels like deleted scenes from a lot of the terrible movies we've already watched.
Yeah,
because it didn't even feel like a movie. And we've watched a lot of movies that didn't feel like movies, and this one really didn't feel like a movie.
This for me personally, this movie was a bit of a heartbreaker because I could see some potential in the screenplay, and I could see sort of what they were aiming for, and then they achieved none of it.
Yeah,
and also...
So I can actually see that this movie had some sort of artistic aims that a lot of our other BGMs...
But what aims? Because it's the same as all these other West Hollywood movies that we watch, which is like Friends Looking for Love, and that's...
Well, it has a feel of like a really bad industrial kind of film aimed towards like gay group therapy for gays who hate being human. Like that's just basically all of them.
But they also got Sally Kirkland, which is
how
weird. That's an Oscar-nominated actress.
But I also think
has never looked worse. Like I was so worse. I felt so bad for her because
the
she
massage
looks
scene.
Oh. Oh yeah, yeah, her side muffin top. Oh no,
which is great. Which is great.
We'll get
but
there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But I also think
shop
that...
it out. I'm sorry, shop that shit out.
No, just move. It was just a bad body position.
Yeah,
she is like 70 something years old.
Not even move. It's just lift that blanket just ever so slightly. That's all you need to do.
But I also think that Sally Kirkland is more. I think somehow that she's more famous than she actually is because then I went on her IMDb page, and I don't recognize her from anything except for occasionally being Sally Kirkland.
No, I mean, I know her from the... I've seen the movie she was nominated for an Oscar
for. Oh, and...
she lost to Cher. Like, how campy is that?
Mm.
But...
And I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was the first case of somebody really heavily campaigning for
absolutely
an Oscar
bid. Because there was this unknown little movie, and she made sure that every voter got a video cassette.
And I do basically. Also, the only other thing I remember her from was she played Helen Lawson in this really low-rent TV series version of Valley of the Dolls.
Oh.
That was on really late
She was also on Ed TV. I remember her being in Ed TV.
She was on Ed
okay,
TV.
So she's
the movie with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
I've seen her in a bunch of things.
What? Yeah, I checked IMDb, and I recognize some titles. I just didn't see
And she's not Sally Kirkland, because sometimes I think she's Sally Kirkland from MASH.
Oh, you mean you think she's Sally Kellerman?
She's Sally Kellerman.
Right.
Yeah.
Hot thighs? What's her hot
thighs? Hot lips.
Hot lips. Hidden Valley Ranch.
That's coming up later. Oh, yeah. She is Hidden Valley Ranch.
Hidden Valley Ranch. Speaking of which, Nashville is playing at the Lightbox in whenever this is airing. Like,
neither of those Sallys were in Nashville.
Weren't they?
No.
Oh, that's right. It's Karen Black. But Sally Kellerman's in every
Barbara
other
Harris.
Robert Altman
movie. Yeah, and Ronnie Blakely.
But they're playing MASH, too. Okay.
I love
MASH
films.
So, the movie opens with guys checking each other out in West Hollywood bistros, and one of them, like, the first one is the guy who ends up being one of the dancers' dates, checking him, like, and I shouldn't say this, but checking him like an old guy who, and I am an old guy, but I don't know, it just seemed weird to me. And then...
They got who they can get.
I'm gonna stop by just saying... it's going to be really hard for you guys to listen to this movie because there's no sense of timing at all. There must be probably about 27,000 scenes because everything is just cut short and you have no idea where they are, who they're with.
Or what the progression is either.
Nothing.
First of all, what's the wish that they all make?
They don't tell you.
Well, They don't tell you. Yeah, they don't tell you.
I was going to say, should you do your synopsis? Is there one?
Yeah, there is
okay,
one.
Okay, go ahead.
I was waiting. I was kind of like, I'm going to do this. Oh, yeah. So basically the synopsis. For you guys to...
That's a delicious synopsis.
It really
is, what that
is. Thank you. Just to get everyone ready. So basically, these three homos meet each other in L.A. They live together.
They're school
and then,
chums, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't Maybe. Even know. Like 5 minutes in, I tuned in.
We're told... They're treated like they're old friends, but we're never really sure how they're friends or what the basis of their relationship is.
Yeah. I think they all went to school in Iowa together.
Okay. All right. I never really got... But I never really got a sense of that. You know what I mean? Like, you can say that, and I'm sure that that's probably...
Yeah, you don't get a sense
but...
of, like, the guy being an alcoholic, but apparently he is, kind of thing. So, you know, anyway. So, these three guys, they know each other from Iowa or anything like that. They live together. They spend about the first 10 minutes of the movie bitching and whining about how gross and gay and middle class they are. So, then they end up going to this wishing well, and they make this wish. Remember that? That's supposed to be the catalyst to, keep the movie going, which it doesn't, because they never mention it again.
Yeah.
And then they spend the next hour and 25 minutes bitching and whining about how gay and middle class they are.
And that's the Wishmakers.
That's pretty much Welcome to the Wishmakers.
And one of them is a dancer who's trying to make it as a dancer and keeps looking for love by having sex with men that he meets online.
Yes.
And
then,
because in 2011, he's never online dated and he's never cruised on.
Well, he doesn't seem to know anything
it's
ever.
It's very new for 2011, Daniel.
Did you also find a shot when he showed
I
up?
I can't remember last Tuesday.
And then his friends are like, well, listen, we know you're actually gay. And I was like, oh, was he supposed to be in the closet? Because I didn't know that he wasn't gay. And, it's like,
and why would he come to West Hollywood to sow his oats if he wasn't?
Well, but also, yeah. And then he's just like, oh, I guess I am. And then, well, that's taken care of quite... Like, his friend's just like, by the way, we know. And he's like, yeah, you're right.
I know. It's so stupid. And he spends a whole movie pounding it in our face that he used to be bisexual. He used to be bisexual.
Honey, we were all bisexual.
Everyone was. So there's that guy, the dancer. Then there's a stand-up comic who's trying to make it in L.A., who's actually a little bit charming.
Except he's not funny. His stand-up scenes are very funny.
Well, no, it's not, slap your knee kind of funny.
But he has this neat little mixture of being funny and having this sort of element of self-loathing, but being really intelligent about it, that I would feel would be an interesting character in a better movie.
He's the least grating of the three of them, that's for sure.
Because he's actually the most natural, I find.
The problem is, like you said, they write in this thing where it's like he has a substance abuse problem, and we never get sense that he's...
Because he's spending the whole movie drinking from a pink plastic cup with a curly
straw.
Yeah,
that's what they're all
straw.
Doing, though. They're always sitting around having a lovely patty. Like, you can't be an alcoholic, or you can't make scenes about an alcoholic who's always having a lovely afternoon on the patio.
This is true.
With martini glasses.
Thank you.
It should be 8 in the morning, and he's got vodka and a water bottle.
Exactly.
And crying, and, whatever. Right.
But this was the scene that I was almost convinced that I was going to like this movie, because the humor was just the first scene where they're all sitting around, because the humor was a little bit self-aware, and they made a True Beverly Hills reference. So I thought going to like this movie.
I didn't even catch that one. And then, of course, our third character is Lady Gaga, who basically shows up.
Who's the quote-unquote fruitiest of the three of them, and is also asexual. At one point, he points out that he doesn't like to have sex with men or women, because he's too busy changing his outfit every 3 seconds.
But didn't he just do this to get the job as Sally Kirkland's assistant?
Yeah, but it's... Yeah,
but at the end, he confesses that he's not attracted to men or women, he just wants to love. And I guess that's what his wish.
So he's like he's like the Judy Greer of Wishlist.
I guess so, except she's so much more adorable.
But it was so confusing, though. Like, I get that, okay, he's campy, he's basically Roger from American Dad and has, a big closet of costumes. But it honestly took me about an hour to realize it was the same person.
Me too, because the scene that he has blonde hair and that they're at the beach, I thought it was a fourth friend who
he hadn't met
yet.
He looks like he's 7 feet tall. And
And then other times he's like, there's the craziest outfit, which is the one where he's Frida Kahlo.
And then he had the Salvador Dali.
Princess Leia buns.
And then he had the Salvador Dali mustache, so I thought it was a new friend that I hadn't met.
I totally thought that was a new guy. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I knew it was the same guy.
He's very versatile.
And then he was doing Madonna and the Girly Show at one point with the hat and the fur coat. And the thing.
Oh, fuck, that's right.
But then he was also doing Annie Lennox at one point, which was scary. Like, his
I actually
was,
loved that.
I loved it too, but it was like some of his looks were so much scarier than the others.
Yeah.
And he looked like Gian Gameshi the whole time. <A little bit. laughs> That's what I kept thinking it was.
Hashtag QCBC. Anyway, carry on. So anyway, that's your synopsis. Those are your characters.
There's there's terrible acting. There's lines like where he says, you have to figure out what you're going to do now that you're here, and hustling doesn't count. And the dancer's like, it doesn't? And he doesn't seem to realize it's a joke. He's like, oh, he seems disappointed that happens.
Even though he's not out yet at the scene.
Right. He's not out yet. And then as soon as his friend makes him face it, he's awfully articulate in talking about why he's in the closet.
What's his
name?
He
gives this, I think he's Ben. Because he's the Jewish one, too.
Okay.
Which did...
Oh, that would make sense.
Was he convincing the Jewish to you?
Both look at Daniel. You must know him.
I didn't think he was convincingly Jewish.
Am I convincingly Jewish? I don't know. Was he?
You're pretty Jewish.
I'm pretty Jewish.
Yeah. But that's okay. We love you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I like being loved in spite of my
Jewishness. Because we talked in the past about waspy-looking Jews in some of the movies that we've done.
I didn't have a problem with it, especially because he made such a kerfuffle about being a secular Jew and being a non-observant Jew. So...
For me, it took actually longer to buy him as a dancer until we actually saw him dancing. And like neither of them were amazing dancers, or at least they weren't really putting their back into it. But they danced like they were actually dancers. And you look up their IMDb and they have...
So he actually is a dancer. Credits.
Yeah, they're both
the blonde dancers. One I get. I don't know his name either.
But mm-hmm. I don't remember his name.
Anyway. The blonde one with a secret.
Yes.
Who
turns out to be Mormon or something.
Is he in the movie?
Yeah, he says something about him being Mormon at one point, but it's not actually...
Is this a companion piece to Latter Days?
The prequel?
But it's annoying to me when he does talk about how he's coming out of the closet, because he goes on this... He has this really long speech about being in the closet, and he's really articulate. It's like, but you know, being in the closet often means being in the closet from yourself, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't mean that you have all the... It's like he was talking like one of the kids on Dawson's Creek, you know, who always seem to know how to like define themselves from the outside.
Yeah.
And then we have this another bad date montage, because all these movies always have to have bad date
montages. This bad date montage actually had a few gem of lines.
I didn't mind it. I have
to give them credit. And it moved so quickly, and it actually felt like bad dates that you could conceivably
And the
have.
One that made me laugh was, a lot of people think just because you're gay you can't be racist.
Yes! That's the one that I wrote down.
Yeah. And then he's on the beach with his friend and he says, oh, this is...
Which time?
Oh, right.
Is this when they're on the absolutely deserted beach and he has blonde hair? Or is this earlier?
I don't remember.
I think that's when he has blonde hair. They're just going on and on asking. Like,
the beach always looks deserted and it always looks like a really cold day. So
yes, thank you. Because remember right at the end, he's like, come on, guys, let's go swimming. But in the back, there's like this tsunami like coming towards them. It's just like, holy shit.
And it always sort of looks like the beach that Barbara Hershey dies on in Beaches.
Yeah, well, because I'm sure they filmed it all
in the background of the lawn chair.
With a floppy hat and a shawl.
I'm sure they filmed it all in 11 days. It was probably like in January in California or something, because it always looks overcast and chilly. Mm-hmm. And there's scenes with them walking like in their swimming trunks on the beach.
What I do have to say about the beach scene, though, is I didn't know that I needed a gay Benny Hill chase montage.
Thank you!
Until they gave it to me and I was like, oh, I didn't know this was something that my life was missing.
Did you like it?
Yes!
Oh, fuck. On. Are you serious? It just made no sense.
Of course not. But it was something I'd never seen before.
Their conversations, I wonder if it was like improvised or something, because there's a lot of dialogue where they don't seem to know what they're saying.
They have no fucking idea.
No, and Gian Gomeshi in particular always interrupts his own sentences. He's always like, he always has these weird hesitations or weird spots in his lines.
Yeah.
My
so it's either that they're improvising or he actually doesn't remember his lines. Like they filmed it so quickly that he didn't get a chance to really like... So
I had that note, because I, especially with the secondary characters, like, they talk so, like, naturally, but not in a good way, where it's just kind
of
like...
My feeling of this was that they were going for some sort of mumblecore Greta Gerwig aesthetic, which none of them were capable enough to fully develop.
That sounds way
too sophisticated. But even, like, Sally Kirkland wasn't capable of developing it in any way. Like, she's doing a lot of these acting exercises in her scenes.
She got really mad about those lobsters.
Yes, really mad. It's really awkward to watch. It was painful to watch.
Oh my god, I swear to god, that was just her audition, and they just threw it into the movie.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons... Because like she is 74 years old,
she looks great.
She doesn't, because she's doing things to stay young.
She's red though. Her face is really
because
like,
she's 74 years old, and then she's doing young hair. It's either a wig or she's just doing whatever she can with the hair that she's got because she's obviously dying it or whatever. And it doesn't look right on a face as old as hers, because I think she's been through stuff too.
Was she amazing in Anna?
Oh no, she's great. I love her, and it's like I'm not saying that like because of her age she shouldn't try to look good, but she's She's doing it wrong, and she looks awkward, and it's bad lighting in this movie as well.
Bad
There's a lot of under-the-chin shots on her, too, but when a woman is in her 70s and bloated, you don't do.
But it doesn't help that the makeup artist probably spent all of her or his time on fucking Lady Gaga, and, yes. You know, yeah, had to go to blotchy. Sally Kirkland because she has blotchy, but her mascara and eyeline was chunky. Like,
she probably insisted on doing it herself.
Probably.
Yeah. It did make me wonder if, at this point of her life, Karen Black was alive and healthy enough to have played this part, because that I would have liked to see.
I know. I don't think she was. No, she was.
She was alive. I don't think she was healthy enough.
No, that's true. But Sally Gargland doesn't seem healthy enough either. Mm. But like you said, like, there's the scene where she's doing the massage table, and how hard would it be to just, like, just fix the shot a bit so that she doesn't... It looked like they were going out of their way to make her look terrible.
Yeah, I can't.
Because she was in a position that, like, even a woman 30 years younger than her would look terrible if they, you know...
It's true.
Totally.
So, anyway. We're sorry, Sally.
We're really sorry, Sally. Sorry, Sally. Maybe she doesn't really know what's going on. I don't know. I don't know much about her. So maybe she's checked out.
For her sake, I hope she was totally meted up for this movie and doesn't even remember it.
And maybe she's friends with people involved, and that's why she's in it. Because anyway,
I hope she made that payment on her.
Are you going to bring up what I think you're going to bring up next?
There's so much.
The fucking scene with the guy, the stand-up comedian in the office,
Drew Trogi,
loses his job. To the boss.
Drew Drogi is in this movie, and he is god-awful.
What the fuck is wrong with this?
What is with that voice? Why did he do that voice on the set? And they were like, oh, that's funny. Do that.
Thank you.
Who thought that?
And Drew Drogi is really smart and really talented. Yeah, how did he think he was okay?
I know nothing about him.
You've never seen the Chloe Sevigny on YouTube that he does?
Chloe Sevigny. He is actually an imitator. No. He just says he's Chloe Sevigny.
He looks so much like her.
He does, but he doesn't do her voice.
But it's its own creation.
He just does things like...
Kudos, I'll check it out after.
I'm throwing Sevigny in. This is what I got for my birthday. And he like a rhinoceros horn.
A bottle of Kamchatka. Right. Yeah. With Shora Agadashlu. And he did have, for a year, he had an amazing, amazing comedy podcast called Glitter in the Garbage, where him and his groundling friends and people from Bridesmaids would do sketches.
The man has a serious career.
I'm really happy to hear that, because that actually gives him a little shred of dignity, because when I saw that, I thought the exact same thing. Like, is everyone just high?
And
I met him, they said, we have to make a movie right now!
Yeah. And I met Drew Drogi very briefly during Pride, and we had a moment where we fantasy cast...
This year?
This year, for like 5 minutes, and we had a moment where we fantasy cast Fran Drescher's replacement in Cinderella on Broadway, because she's playing the Wicked Stepmother.
Oh my god.
Well, wow. So it was great.
I'm really glad you didn't see this movie before you met him.
I'm really happy too.
He says that... The stand-up comedian, Jason, I think is his name, he says that a kid told him that he looked like
Frankenstein or Dracula.
He actually looks like Martha Plimpton, but anyway.
Speaking of, there's a dude on YouTube who has a totally Martha YouTube comedy series just because he looks like Martha Plimpton.
That is so funny.
Not this dude, somebody else?
Somebody else. There's a lot of skinny gay guys who
on
look
one
like
of the
Martha
beach
Plimpton
scenes, he says, it's the gay world that I don't like. I think because it's the dancer complaining about dating, and it's just like, yeah, but you're in West Hollywood. Like,
well, if I had just emerged from a bad dating montage, I would probably complain about it too.
And then on there is the one beach scene where, like, they're all in tiny little swim shorts, except for Gian Gomeshi is wearing, like, a full suit.
Yeah, that's when he's blonde, right?
Right, he is blonde. Yeah.
He's
dressed like Bruce LaBruce in Hustler
totally,
White.
Totally. Oh, my God. This whole, like, I swear to God, 75% of the script is just questions, because that's all they do.
Yes.
And, it, you know, it's
I
like,
what do you want?
Why are we gay? Why aren't we in a relationship?
And
why do we love celebrities?
Why did Frankenstein get fired?
I don't know. I couldn't understand.
Because he didn't want to have martinis with Drew Drogi's Rihanna-loving mother. That's what I understood.
Okay. Oh, that's so weird.
I think that's what I understood.
So why would someone as talented as Drew Drogi be like, oh, this is what I totally have to do. Like,
guys, I got this. I got this one.
Yeah.
I don't know. He probably did it in rehearsal, and the guy was like, go for it!
Yeah. It's so funny, because when you do the voice, it sounds like at the end of Roger Rabbit.
When he sounds just like that!
Oh, Judge Doom?
Judge Doom.
Yes, he does.
And then they're having a conversation like, okay, so Frankenstein decides that to make it in show business, he has to find a powerful man in show business. And he says, who's the most powerful man in Hollywood?
Anything.
And he says,
David Geffen.
Is that still true? Is David Geffen still the most powerful man in Hollywood?
I don't think so.
Still 1989.
Michael Bay? Who's the most powerful man in Hollywood?
Like, I wonder if David Geffen is still at it behind the scenes.
He's the most powerful gay man
I think the most powerful gay man. But is he still, though?
There's got to be a more powerful gay.
Or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
I don't know that he ever hit rock bottom. Well,
he's also like, probably semi-retired. He's 70.
Yeah, he's probably got billions of dollars.
He's been around forever,
I just don't know that he has his hands in everything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, power implies not just money, and not even influence, but, like, being active as well.
Well, 2011 in West Hollywood, I mean, I'm sure there's, like, a million powerful gay guys. Like, why would they choose
Joel Schumacher? Right?
So then there's all these scenes where they all go to this pot-smoking guy who is at a therapist?
I don't know where he comes from.
I only learned at the end through the credits his name was The Shaman.
Okay, so he's, like, their West Hollywood version of a therapist? Like, they're going to him...
I guess.
He may have been J.K. Simmons. I'm not sure. He may have been J.K. Simmons.
But they never explain it. They never explain it. They just show up and he just talks to them.
He seems to be the only person who actually speaks like he knows what he's saying, though. Really? Like, he's the least annoying of everyone to listen to. It's just we don't know why he's there.
There's no... Yeah, about how he fits into all of these guys.
Yeah, but you know what? I will tell you...
Or what they get out of it.
It doesn't even matter if we know or don't know who this guy is. If you're going to have a scene where your therapist or non-therapist is going to smoke from a bong, can you make the lighter work? Because that entire scene was... I was like, can somebody fucking get this girl a fire?
And then we're back to the dancer whining with his friend about how he's still looking for love and he's talking about meeting guys. It's like, okay, you're out of the closet. Like, get over yourself already. I'm tired of listening to you. And then he says, Frankenstein asks him, like, what are you looking for? He goes, I don't know, love. And he goes, you're so mushy. Why is he mushy? He just said he was looking for love.
What?
How mean is this?
We're all looking for love.
The dancer, he says, I'm looking for love. He's like, you're so mushy. It's like, no. He's mushy if he's like, I just want a guy that, like, we can have matching pillowcases or something. Like, that's mushy. If you're looking for love, that's human, you know? And at the
mushy,
same time...
Mushy is that guy from the other movie who would call the date's mother to get the eggplant recipe. That's mushy.
Psycho mushy.
That's right.
And, like, if you're trying to make a comment about the hard nature of West Hollywood, then... there should be a follow-through to that. Like, mm-hmm, if he's going to call him mushy, it should be followed by him being a lot more of a player himself.
Yeah, instead, it's following by him magically discovering the internet for the first time.
Who, Ben? Yeah, that
right,
guy.
And Frankenstein does have a relationship with a guy he meets in AA who is a producer of some kind?
Yeah, but we don't learn he's a producer until, like, way after. But anyway,
well, no,
yeah.
Because at the AA meeting, one of the guys turns to him and is like, "That's so and so."
That's
and so it's just like we assume that he's a Hollywood VIP,
shrouded in secrecy.
Specifically, who?
But one of my good lines when Ben was talking to a dancer for the first time, and the dancer's like, "So, what kind of dance do you do?" And he says, Ben says, well, you know, I do yoga, and I teach hip-hop class.
Like, okay, what? Those guys, so he meets, a dancer hits on him after he teaches a yoga class or some kind of class.
Yeah.
He hits on him, and then they talk about dancing for a really long time, and it's never interesting, and it's like... I feel like those scenes in particular were probably improvised, where it's like, well, I've got these two real dancers who are playing these parts, and they're just going to talk about dancing. And they're both, they look at each other confused the whole time, like, well, like, I like to work on my core,
And if you have dancers, you have to hold them by the hands, and you have to tell them exactly what to do.
Right, and then, it cuts to them, on their date, and like later, and they're still talking about dancing, and the one of them is talking about Pina Bausch, which I find really offensive because, first of all, he doesn't describe
it correctly.
But
they're also...
At all.
No, and he's also trying to get some kind of street cred with us for knowing Pina Bausch.
And they're also talking about dance the way that Bubba talked about shrimp in Forrest Gump, which is just, there's contemporary dance, and there's jazz dance, and there's tap dance.
And also, why haven't both of them heard of Pina Bausch? I'd like to know. I'd like to know if any...
We've all heard of Pina Bausch.
Well, it's like the director said, you're in this scene, you're going to talk about a dance, or go research one. Go! Anyway, I just want to comment. I'm going through my notes here, and I wrote a note. I would watch a million E-Cupids right now.
Oh, I was missing another gay sequel watching this movie. I was totally missing
those things come
sequel.
True, Michael.
I'm sorry. E-Cupid is my favorite now.
He describes Pina Bausch as like nothing happens, and then all of a sudden there's spastic moves. That's not what happens.
Pina's on Netflix. Everybody go watch Pina.
Well, they probably hadn't seen that by then because that came out the same year as this.
2010.
But I knew who she was because of Pedro Almodovar, because he has her and talked to her.
Because of being an educated human being.
Well, there's that,
exactly. Was she? Was she? In, was
It's actually her performing Kathy Mueller at the beginning of
Talk. I don't remember. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah. And
Talk to Her was the one with the giant vagina, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how we all think of it. So they're just talking and talking and talking. And then it turns out that the guy doesn't want to have sex with him. He's like, I don't want to be in a relationship. It's like, you've been hitting on him nonstop since he taught your fucking class. And you've been, like, you owe it to him. Yeah. No, that's not how I feel. But, like,
hashtag yes, all gays.
But this character makes no sense, basically, which is like suddenly he's like, oh, no, I don't want this.
The blonde
like,
but then, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he sort of comes in and out of the story at will.
It's explained in the end, obviously.
But then it turns out, they decide that because they're not going to go and have a relationship, they're going to work on a project together. So in between the other scenes, we keep cutting to them in their dance.
Most boring project ever.
We keep cutting to them in their dance studio, and they're just like mumbling things to each other, like, okay, so I'm going to grab your hand. Okay. Yeah.
And then I thought
we
this
never
was,
really see.
And then I thought this was sort of like a knockoff of the Silver Linings Playbook, the awfulness of the dance competition in Silver Linings.
Like
except that came out like a year later.
Well, and that was also like intentionally bad and like funny as opposed to.
It was not funny. There was nothing funny about Silver Linings Playbook.
God, okay. I didn't like that movie enough to argue with you about it, but I did like it. So, but with them, first of all, you could tell that it's actually one scene of them putting that dance together that they just cut up and split it, like, spread out over the movie. But there's never a sense of them, like, creating something conceptually and then developing it. It's literally just them like, okay, I'll just kick like this. Okay, and then I'll just, all right.
And then
have you ever had to do it with a guy?
Yeah, and then there's that scene about whether a point would be good or not a point.
It's called a flex, Michael. In the dancer world, we call it a flex.
They said point, bitch. Look it up.
It's just, I'm like, they keep talking, but I don't understand, like, nothing is coming
I know nothing's coming to fruition. You're just like, I don't see the dance.
This movie has less plot than a lot of the movies we've watched, and we've watched some really bad
But so many scenes.
But so many scenes.
And this was another one where it's actually 88 minutes, but it took me literally the whole day to watch it.
And it took me 2 days.
They're walking.
I had to finish it today.
The scene where he tells him he doesn't actually want to date him, he says it's because I'm really stressed out right now, which, okay. But they're walking next to, like, a little man-made lake or a pool, but the way it's shot, it actually looks like they're walking through the water.
Oh, really?
It's a three-quarter shot the entire time.
Are they both dead?
It never establishes them. Like, it never establishes location. It's just suddenly them walking, and you only see up to their knees, and then the water is obviously behind them. But it took me... I was about 5 minutes into this 50-hour scene before I was like, oh, they're not actually walking in the water.
Oh my God,
I thought they were waiting in the pool. And it's like, no, they're actually not in the water.
No.
And if you're really stressed out, wouldn't getting laid just make it a whole lot better?
Well, that's what
even if
says
you have HIV.
Like, I know ways to de-stress you.
My
and the guy's like,
God.
Nah, it's okay. And then in the end, spoiler alert, we find out that the blonde guy is HIV positive. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, is that the reason why he was avoid? Because he doesn't want to get too close until the other person knows so that he can, you know. Make
well,
sure
I mean,
that he's not gonna freak
I think
out.
It is, but it's just too bad that they introduced the dancer like 20 minutes into the movie and then don't really address it until an hour and 20 minutes later, right?
But
then you're just kind of like, I don't.
But when you do find out that he's HIV positive, I never really got the sense that, oh, now he's finally revealed the reason why. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem like a connection. It's more like I'm making that connection because it's the only thing that can make sense.
Yeah.
Because nothing makes sense in this movie. Nothing connects in any way.
Okay.
So, now Gianmeschi needs to find a job because his trust funds run out.
And don't you love his Sonny Bono outfit?
That one was weird. It didn't strike me as Sonny Bono. To me, it was more like...
But like old... More like...
It looked like a girl with a mustache.
More like that Golden Girls where Sophia dresses like Sonny Bono.
Like Sonny Bono, you idiot! And so he gets a job working for Sally Kirkland, who is playing a has-been actress. Right.
Big stretch.
Who looks like she's been beaten with a stick for the last 10 years.
That's what they do to women over 45.
And genuinely looks like she's reading her dialogue off of a cue card most of the time. Like she just
Which
looks
she probably
really,
is. She just got
she
here.
She looks really confused.
Yeah.
And she actually, like, what I noticed was her face starts off as a normal shape, but just gets redder and redder and redder as the movie goes on.
Yeah, and if you look in the background of all of her scenes, there's bottles of booze everywhere, which I'm sure she was probably dipping
into. I hope so.
Well, they're probably filming it at her house, and they probably filmed her for, like, 3 days. She literally looks like she woke up in the morning and didn't do anything, and then just like, oh, they're here, and she just started
I want to be a fly on the wall in that conversation. Like, when was it a good idea for her to be like, you know what, I'm going to do this movie.
Yeah, because it's not like, I mean, if she needs the money, I don't know that she'd get much out of this particular movie. No. So I don't, I'm, again, she's friends
and also
with somebody
if
involved.
Yeah, and if she's been an actress since the 1970s, so she should know her best angle. She should know how she should be lit. Totally. She should know how she should be made up.
Totally. Yeah. Well, if it's any consolation, well, at least she just made 75 cents from us because we watched it on Netflix. You're welcome.
You're welcome. I mean, maybe the director was like her assistant at some point. Yeah. Like, I don't, who knows? Oh, it's so, so confusing.
Weird. I know.
And then she hires Young Gomeshi because she thinks she wants a woman to work for her.
She thinks it's like a sin, yeah.
And she thinks it's a woman.
I'm just so in love that we're calling him Young Gomeshi now.
I can't remember his name.
I love it.
But Young Gomeshi's not dressed like a woman.
It's Young Gomeshi, like, Frankenstein, and the Jew.
But he's dressed like Velma from Scooby-Doo. Like, yes. How did she even know that that was a woman?
I don't know.
I'm still not entirely sure Velma was a woman.
And then he looks like Jesus in the next scene.
He's got the red robe. He's totally dressed like Jesus. And then the next scene, he's with the bong-smoking therapist. Yeah. And that's when he gets all deep talking about androgyny and how he doesn't feel like a man or a woman. I was like, did you have to dress like Jesus to have that conversation?
And then that could be interesting, but that's never exploited.
What?
The concept of this character's sexual androgyny or confusion.
It
could be a really interesting plot point in a gay movie, but it never gets explored.
And you're right, because...
Because remember when we talked about another gay sequel and how there's like a sexual hierarchy in that, and that the really fruity one doesn't have a sex life, but it's not actually addressed. Mm-hmm. And then here it's addressed, but it's not... It's mentioned, it's not addressed.
But I'm with you, Daniel, because that last scene, that closing scene where he has his heart-to-heart with Ben and they have that weird
and he just
hug
needs to
and everything.
Be held.
That was actually a really nice moment.
When he's he needs to hug.
When he's conveniently shirtless. And sweaty.
Sure, whatever. Yeah. But that was a moment where I was kind of like, okay, whatever, I can let this pass. But it, you know, I mean, it has a really good direction, but unfortunately, he's just dressed too many ways for me to care.
Well, there's that, and also none of these characters ever seem like real people ever.
Ever.
And every attempt that they make to make them human doesn't work.
How did...
Especially, because Gian Gomeshi's wardrobe is a lot like Marsha Gay Harden in Used People, which is an adorable movie with Shirley MacLaine.
I can't believe you brought up Used People. I thought
Remember how, like, her character dressed up like a different movie character every day?
Were they Jews or Italians?
They were. She was, Shirley's Jewish and Marcello's Italian.
Okay.
Because remember, he picks her up at her husband's shiver.
I don't know if I saw this movie, but I know
really?
It.
Oh, it's really charming. It's like, everyone's in it. Shirley MacLaine, Kathy Bates, Jessica Tandy, and Marsha Gay Harden is wonderful. And it's like this adorably quirky character. She dresses up like a different movie star every day.
Oh.
It's the 60s, so it's just like...
So it's like a Steel Magnolias
girl,
on the Upper East Side.
Yes. And so, like, I feel like that's the sort of thing that they're trying to go for with this character. And it's not quirky. It's actually, like, psychologically disturbing. And also just unbelievable. Like, the effort he puts into, like, a new hairstyle or a new hair color.
Dyeing your hair, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not actually believable.
But there's one thing also about this movie. I get that it's super low budget, but sometimes it's lit in such a way that it makes the background look like it's almost green screen. And
At
the end it's green screen.
Yes.
But, like, and even in Sally Kirkland's house...
Was the end green screen?
It really was.
I had no idea.
But, like, even in Sally Kirkland's house, it's like, why did they have to green screen a living room?
No, it's just very weird. The only scene that's well lit is when they're at the bar. They go to a bar at one point, like a dimly lit bar.
At the end?
Towards the end. And it's when he runs into...
Oh, when he puts the shaggy coat on him so the boyfriend can't see him.
Right.
And then that plot just gets dropped.
Right.
And we never get any resolution.
We'll get to it.
So there's still so much plot to cover.
And Frankenstein's former boss, Drew Drogi, is at the AA meeting.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Okay.
And then the Jew meets his boyfriend at a gangbang.
Right. Oh, that's right. The boyfriend.
Is it time for this?
The boyfriend
the
who is like,
is it?
Yeah.
The boyfriend who he feels so close to, but who only ever wants to do sex parties.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all he ever does with his
mustache
time.
Mondays.
Yeah.
Who can blame him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I don't know. If I was dating someone like that, it wouldn't be jealousy that I'd feel. I'd be like, can we just watch a movie? Like, does it always have to be an orgy every day?
Can we please
I am tired.
Tired.
Yeah. You know what? The thing I hate most about BGMs is this non-subtle preachiness about how miserable gay men's lives are and how they're such victims when really, like, they're not, because nothing happens in the movie where people actually hit rock bottom or anything. And an example is the line where the stand-up comic has a little bit of a verbal meltdown, and he's like, My life is so unmanageable. I don't have a car. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
This is also him play acting for the benefit of the right. David Geffen-esque producer. So I don't think he means anything in that moment, but I totally understand really? What you're saying yeah. at the same time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's because people have the fantasy.
But this
of
whole movie is like that, though. It's kind of like, how come we're not in a relationship? How come nobody loves me? It's mm-hmm. just like, you know what? Actually, you're not a street youth. There's actually people who are far off worse. Right.
Yeah, and it's also like many bad gay movies. There's this chasm between having a lot of sex and falling in love, and yeah. never the twain shall meet.
Right, or and there's they something, do, but and there's they, something, they do so hypocritically.
And yeah. there's something wrong and creepy with you if you really want either of those things right, at right, one right. given time.
And that's why I said I'm really surprised that this movie's 2011. This feels like a late 90s movie to me where, yeah. you know, values weren't really set in place.
Addressing that fantasy of, like, wanting to be with a guy who looks like a porn star but who acts, like, yeah. More buttoned up than that, and so trying to find the middle ground between those things leads to these very, very weird... Because these movies, they want to be romantic because they want to be romantic, but at the mm-hmm. same time, they want to indulge our fantasies by having an excuse for... sexual bodiness of some kind, which yeah. is not really indulged in. This movie's not nearly dirty enough for how terrible
no
it is.
There's no
biz. There's barely any nudity. The only
is there
nudity...
even some sex?
No, not really.
There's post-sex. There's post-coitus. Post-sex.
And the only nudity is when the Jew signs Sally up for
Kirkland.
Online. But when the dancer signs up for online dating, there's a montage of the photos that he takes. He takes some really lame... His friend takes really lame photos of him.
Where he's fucking the bull?
Yeah. Yes.
And he's like, fuck the bull. Fuck the bull. Fuck the bull. I was like, okay.
But like, they show the pictures and there's some weird angles there. It's like, no one would ever go out with you.
And he's an attractive guy.
They're all attractive. Yeah, he's a particularly attractive guy. And in that like...
Jews can be attractive.
Kind of way. I know that Jews can be attractive. James Franco's attractive.
Hey!
I just did that on purpose.
Is he Jewish?
Ixnay on the Ames Franco J.
Michael Vartan not on the is attractive.
Michael Vartan is very attractive.
And then he is in bed with the guy that he meets, who ends up not going on a second date with him, and it's the worst tragedy in the world. And the guy asks him, have you ever bottomed? Which is the first time in the world a dancer ever said no.
Right.
And it's like a scene, you know, it's just like, well, just say no. Why am I waiting for you to figure this out? The older guy has a major Botox face, by the way. I found him very disturbing.
Oh, he does. Yeah,
and
he?
Who was he again? He was just a date. He was,
just
a
random.
He was just a date,
right?
But then he ends up going on a date with Frank. Yeah.
But he was
later.
Also like, I'm not going to give you my phone number, but meet me at
That's
this club.
Right.
Right, and then we all know that he's not going to meet him there. And it's like, whatever, it's just one of the things, that we've all had it happen to us, we have a great first date, nothing ever happens. But then he goes, that same guy goes on a date with Frankenstein, and the dancer sees him.
Yeah,
and
like loses it.
Like he left him with pregnant, without rent to pay. Like, loses it. It's like, again, if he stood you up. Like, get over it. I don't know.
You have to earn the right to be that drama. And he didn't earn that right
at all. Totally. And, like, it's happened to me. Exactly what happened to him has happened to me. And I got to tell you, with all the guys that it's... There's a lot of guys who've done that to me. All of them, if
yeah,
I run
too.
Into them tomorrow, I would just say hi and it would be fine. Like, no, I don't need to get into it with them.
Did you guys notice? I don't even know what scene it was, but the most... politically incorrect, nonsensical line ever. The black mongoloid cock.
Yes.
No, I don't remember.
Blackmongoloidcock.com. They were listing
off
all the sex websites.
Is that what
websites.
It was?
Oh, because he was telling them all the websites that you can find
yes.
dates on. Right?
And I was like, did I fucking hear that right?
Yeah.
I don't.
Did you type it into your computer?
No.
Because you're worried about it being in your browser history?
Well, maybe that's why my computer conked out tonight.
And then we cut back to Frankenstein doing his stand-up, and he's telling all this stuff about his friends that are not really funny, but very private, and it's like...
And very
terrible. Do you ever keep anything to yourself? Like, you shouldn't reveal that much stuff in your... Like, I know that...
He's like the Michael Richards of bad gay comics.
Oh, God.
I guess so. Okay.
When are we at that scene with the Spanish guy in bed? Because you know where he's from, right?
No.
Another gay sequel.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was he the guy in the water skis who was like...
He was the Spanish...
He was.
The Spanish
Are you
guy,
sure
the innocent
the
one. Yes, I total IMDb'd it.
Did he really?
God, I didn't recognize him at all.
Yeah, I paused it. I was like, I know him.
Because this guy looked like he had fake tits.
Totally.
Yeah,
that
he
weird
like he had
peck.
Implants. Yeah.
I think it's total lighting once again.
Maybe, yeah.
Fucking
and
up.
Like makeup mm-hmm. too.
But I... Yeah,
Sally
no, I totally checked
use
it out.
Of that.
She could have, because with guys, they put makeup on them to accentuate whatever muscle
I do it every
muscle,
day.
Muscle term that they have. Hugh Grant refused to be shirtless in Notting Hill because they told him they were going to airbrush abs on him.
Right. Didn't they do that in one of his shirtless,
and he's like, "Fuck it," and he kept. He insisted on keeping his shirt on because he refused to be airbrushed.
I thought he got airbrushed in Four Weddings. I thought they had shading on him for a bedroom in Four Weddings.
But he also would not have been in a position to say anything in that movie
because he wasn't a star.
Where are we at?
And also in that movie, he's playing like a young guy, like he's like a man about town.
Let's just talk about Hugh Grant for like three
listen,
more minutes.
mid to late '90s, Hugh Grant is like the cutest guy who ever lived. He looks like ass now. He looks like he's been in the water.
Oh, he's haggard now
after drowning.
I've been racking my brain to think of the sexiest Jew I can think of.
Not Hugh Grant.
Richard Dreyfuss was never sexy, was he?
I could see a quirky kind of cuteness.
Like in The Goodbye Girl? In Jaws. Is he sexy?
In Jaws. Like Jaws, Richard Dreyfuss. If I was stuck on Martha's Vineyard and he was around.
In 1976.
I would have a good time.
Stumbling home from Carly Simon's.
Yeah. Leaving Rana's house after one of her satyrs. All right. So there is a scene with the therapist about the realities of meeting guys online.
Is he a therapist?
Whatever, the shaman.
The shaman.
That is actually, he has a very smart conversation with him about meeting guys online.
Except he calls it a sex line all the time, which I'm like, dude, we're not in the 90s.
I noticed that. 1976.
Thank you.
And then he meets the guy that becomes his boyfriend who is immediately introduced as someone who's into
the gangbang guy, the seamster.
Oh, his terrible boyfriend.
I didn't mean for it to be a gangbang, it's just that there was only one bottom. And, they talk about gangbanging like it's sweet romantic comedy dialogue.
Yeah.
But it's as not if, funny as enough to be like
as rebellious. If it's a meet cute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I don't have a moral problem meeting with people meeting that way, but it's not adorable. Like it's not sweet. You're not gonna tell all your friends. You're gonna tell the friends who you know you're not gonna judge.
Mm-hmm. Although I will now make my gay romantic comedy with sort of this cute and awkward gangbang scene where somebody drops and their heads butt together or they look up.
The other problem is that most of the outdoor scenes are obviously very post-dubbed, and that one in particular is really bad.
Oh, when they're walking
away in the desert?
No, you can tell because they're filming on the beach. There's probably so much ambient noise that they couldn't hear what they were saying, or they didn't have a pole long enough for the microphone to.
Which is like, entirely possible.
Yeah, and so it's post-dubbed, but you can tell that it's very badly post-dubbed because they're not matching their mouths or their breathing, and then there's someone in the background just going to create the sound. Like literally just like,
God.
I have no strength. How are we going to do another year of this podcast?
After this is the scene where they're talking about pointing their foot for like 15 minutes.
It's riveting.
It's like a really bad reality TV show whenever they're talking about their dancing.
Like an unedited reality show. Anyway.
Oh, and then suddenly he's in love with this new boyfriend who only ever wants to go to sex parties. And then is when Jason, or the Frankenstein guy, brings home the guy that makes Dancer really, really angry.
Even though he's dating the gangbanger.
Right. Right.
That's right, he is at that point.
But it is a lesson to us all. Like, don't, if you're in West Hollywood doing online dating, don't lie to anybody, because eventually someone's going to be connected to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly happened to me in Toronto. It's definitely going to happen there.
And then everything, and then all the plots just get dropped so that we can resolve the Dancer stuff.
Right.
Yeah, everything.
And that's
just
the end of our podcast.
And that guy was apparently in Violent Tendencies. I looked him up on IMDb.
Which one? The Dancer?
No, the one that's like didn't show up and then was dating Frankenstein.
Did he
play?
Is that Lindy Cohn?
No, he has a huge filmography of doing like bit parts in big movies as well as small. Like a huge, huge filmography.
Well, the Dancer has
Violent Tendencies.
The Dancer has a really reputable.
Portfolio. The blonde one?
Yeah.
Yeah, all dance stuff. Yeah.
He's the Pina Bausch of the gay Los Angeles dance community.
And then is when we find out Gian Gomeshi tells us that he's asexual, and this is where I realize his name was Corey, which why someone like that would be named Corey, I have no idea.
Somebody has to be named Corey.
And then Jason, the Frankenstein guy, is hanging out with a movie producer and gives him a massage, which is just weird.
A foot massage. Where apparently he has all his tattoos on his foot.
All of them. About his, like, 35 family members on one side of his foot.
Which you don't
it's
see.
It's amazing.
And then is Sally Kellerman's massage, which I suppose is the scene that, like, pushes Gian Gomeshi over the edge.
Well, he has some really good reactions. Like, he's really good at reacting. And so, his whole reaction when she's like, now the ass. It was really quirky and cute, but then I couldn't stop staring at, like, the folds.
And I guess, is the point that like, she when she said that she really wants an assistant who is basically her slave, that she truly, truly meant it? Like, this is how far it goes?
Like, every character in this movie? I don't know what she wants.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Let's not forget the high voice hitting on the AA guy,
who then hands him a blank piece of paper and says, "Call me."
Yeah, I just don't understand that choice whatsoever.
And then orgy guy dumps Ben, and I don't blame him because Ben doesn't stop yelling. He's yelling all the time. He's so mad.
We're
at everybody.
Passionate people.
Well, I mean, like every BGM as well. I mean, if characters are going to have opinions, they really have to stick to them in this movie. Like, everyone flip-flops all over the place. Like, Frankenstein shows the porno sites to Ben, then Ben turns into a slut, and then Frankenstein denounces him because he's like, "You've changed." It's like, well, it's your fucking fault. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody
and then
relax.
Young Gomeshi quits Sally Kirkland dressed like Kill Bill and Harry Potter at the same time. And then he leaves and she doesn't look like she knows what's just happened. And she just sort of staggers
She's
away.
Like looking off to the director being like, "Am I done now?"
And then he's like, "I'm quitting, I'm moving on in life." And she's like, okay.
And then we see her next after she stages like a Norma Desmond suicide attempt.
Right.
When she's wearing her Eastern caftan. Right. And she talks about this dream that she had of her father who abandoned her that goes nowhere.
I don't know, maybe she needed one last moment.
And then the guys go to the bar because Frankenstein wants to see if he can have one drink, and mm-hmm. but stay like a social
even though there's
drinker.
Even again there's no proof of him being any sort of an alcoholic.
Well,
none.
Any kind.
They don't talk about the 12 steps for him. He doesn't have those little
I just got the impression that he was faking AA to meet someone famous.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I didn't think that he was there for a real
Which
reason.
Which is fine, but then why convince your friends to go for that one drink to see? Like, it's just none of it makes sense.
And also, especially because they're worried about him because. He's been drinking too much, but that doesn't mean he's an alcoholic. It means he's gone on a bender. And you make sure that doesn't become too long and habitual before you bug someone about being an
alcoholic.
And again,
this is a clear example of like no consistency in character choices because it's the friends that are like, "We're worried about you. You're an alcoholic." And he's like, "Let me see if I can have one beer." And they're sure.
And then the boyfriend from AA sees him and goes completely apeshit on him in the bar.
Yeah.
And then Sally Kirkland tries to kill herself so that she'll stay in the movie.
But let's get back
to... And then that's when she's shot under the chin in that whole scene, and it's really unflattering.
Yeah, it's very destructive.
It looks like an autopsy, quite frankly.
Let's go back to the monologue for a second of the AA sponsor, like, giving it to fucking Frankenstein. At one point,
He's hidden under the jacket.
While he's under the jacket, yes. But at one point, I swear to God, I can close my eyes, and it sounded like a monologue that B. Arthur would have said in The Golden Girls.
In what context?
Just, you know, when she dresses like her somebody who's confronting her and she has a positive point and she like starts building and then her voice gets worse and worse.
Or like a Julia Sugarbaker aria.
Kind of, yeah.
Do not insult the legacy of Julia Sugarbaker.
I'm not.
Fight. The podcast is over. Thank you. Goodbye.
As usual, a lot of bad music in this movie. A lot of bad Twinkle
And it was really the beginning when they had that sort of 1950s knockoff for the Three Coins in the Fountain montage, but it was all synth.
Right, yeah. The whole movie is synth.
Yeah.
And then is the scene you're talking about where Dancer comes out of the shower and is like his towel and Corey's like
I need a hug.
Yeah.
For an asexual, he certainly knows how to get a half naked guy to hug
him. And he needs a long hug.
And at that point I realized that Corey looks a lot like Peter Lorre in the movie M by Fritz Lang. Which became very disturbing after that point. If someone was hugging me while giving me a speech about seeing my naked body and how it reminds him how he wants affection, I would get very awkward. That dancer is so passive.
I'd say
about
thank
everything.
You and shut up.
Like, he yells at the guys who dump him, but other times he's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Back to the dancers, they're still working on this grand project, which when they finally perform it at the end in front of, I think you're being generous by thinking that it's green screen. They're standing in front of like a Mac computer.
I don't know.
To me, it reminded me
of like It's a Jolly Holiday and Mary Poppins when they're in like the restaurant and I
Even
wanted
less
a bunch
sophisticated.
Of, I oh, really totally. Want, I really wanted a bunch of fucking dancing penguins to come out. And,
yeah.
They couldn't afford it.
But their dancing is bad. Like, it looks like they didn't really finish working on their project.
It's bad, and
it's
also...
It's bad in that it's under-rehearsed or under-determined, not because they can't dance.
It's bad, but it's also, you don't see any of the moves that they were actually working on. It's all like a whole new thing.
And also, wasn't the point of this choreography was that it was for public consumption at a later date during a festival?
I don't even know, but why couldn't they just do it in a real park?
Well, there's that, too.
Like, why not? Anyway. Every
time an issue comes up, people have these really lengthy conversations that are completely inane and unintelligent, including the fact that when the dancer tells him that he's HIV positive, and then he's just, like, immediately... He
and
has
how
no
are they in bed already? There's no...
He just has, like, a full, like, well, Oh, fuck, I don't remember what he says. I just
he
watched
said,
it last
I knew,
night.
I knew people... What did he say? I knew I would never have sex again. Right. It was one of his lines. I was just like, well, you know, but
and again,
HIV
this
positive
is...
people still have sex.
Yeah, yeah. What he
and
should
again,
have said was,
is...
I thought I would never have sex
again. And again, this is a BGM trait of characters getting shamed when they want sex and getting shamed when they don't want sex.
Right.
Getting shamed when they want love, getting shamed when they don't want love.
And he also says to him, I want to know your history, which he means to say, I want to know all about you.
Yeah.
But when someone's just told you that they're HIV positive and you say, I want to know your history, it's like, I want to know every needle that went into your body.
Oh, when
every
did you get it?
Yeah. Like,
how much sperm did you swallow?
Like, and also, there's no...
not the way to put that question.
And also, there's no connecting the dots between, oh, I don't want to have sex, I don't want to get involved, and then naked in bed together.
Right. There's that, too. Oh, no, because they have a soulmate conversation. That's why they end up in bed together.
Really?
Yeah. This is how this always happens. And then... And then he says he's 27. Is that guy really only 27?
I don't know.
The blonde one tells him he's only 27.
Mm.
I don't know.
I can kind of see it.
And then he says, if we meet in our hearts, doesn't that go beyond the physical? What?
Oh, I don't know. I totally tuned out.
What is that? And then they're dancing in front of the green screen, and then it's over. And
And none of the other plot points get picked up again.
None.
Like, on the one hand, I was in torture for the last 85 minutes, so I wasn't sorry it was over. But at the same time, I'm like, it's over?
Yeah.
But nothing was resolved.
And we don't know what they were wishing for. We don't
and
know what anybody
never,
wanted.
Yeah, we don't know what they wished for. We don't know if their wishes came true. They never go back to the fact that they made a wish in the fountain in the first place. It's called The Wishmakers or Masters. So it's just...
I want to say this to the director of this film. We have watched Eating Out. We have watched another gay sequel. We have watched...
E-Cupid.
We have watched Under One Roof. And I got to tell you,
Gone But Not Forgotten.
You should apologize to everyone you've ever met in your entire life for taking up their time. And you go to your mother and you say, sorry that I came out of you and I didn't do anything. Better than this.
This is not my personal worst. I don't think this is anywhere
oh,
near
fuck
my
off.
Personal
Are
worst.
Are you serious?
We've seen so much worse.
It's a hard competition.
Gone But Not Forgotten?
Time. That's not worse than this. That one took place in the Pacific Northwest. Even you said yourself that was a matter of appeal. Plus it had Angry Sigourney Weaver woman.
That's right.
Angry Sigourney Weaver woman?
I don't eat cheese. Remember?
Gone But Not Forgotten. Which one is that? Is that the father? That
it was the sheriff.
No, that's Mulligan's.
Mulligan's.
Oh, Mulligan's I didn't see.
They're all blending in, right?
I know.
We've been at this for so long.
I don't have the strength.
We didn't hate our lives before we started this podcast, and now we're just stuck on the train. We're just stuck doing it.
I'm going to go
Every time I tell my friends, oh, I'm recording an episode tonight, they're like, how do you fucking watch all those bad movies? You must be so mad. And I'm like, no.
Do they listen?
What?
Do they listen to the show?
Of course they do.
Hi! Okay. Hi!
Hi!
Nice to hear you guys. Write to us. Rate us.
Yeah, fucking rate us. Let's go.
So, that's it for me. You guys have anything you
want? I'm tired.
Fuck, I hate it.
I don't know. Like, the one positive thing I'll say is that there were subtle natural moments where I was just like, okay. There. I said it. I put out a positive.
I must have been... passing out.
Oh god, they're so short.
And I think the acting was maybe just 1.5 degrees better than what we've seen in a couple of our TLA movies. The acting was just marginally better. Not good.
I rarely
just marginally better.
Compared to
and I was
why are you looking at me like that?
I was very, very upset about Sally Kirkland in this movie. Like,
because
I was excited about the fact that she was in it, and I was really upset just to see her looking so defeated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Our photo is by Michael Sheffer. We take donations. Please do not hesitate to drop us a tip if you can. Well, you can do that by following the link on our website or just go to PayPal and enter badgaymovies2013@gmail.com. But even if you can't donate, please tell your friends about us, spread links around and stuff like that. Podcasts only get popular through word of mouth, so we would appreciate any kind of help you can do to promote us. Share us on Facebook or whatever. We are on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Tumblr. Just look up Bad Gay Movies. Visit our website at badgaymovies.com, and please write to us anytime, badgaymovies2013@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, recommendations, what have you.
Michael's mother or not.
Right. Subscribe to us on iTunes, and if you do that, please rate us, please review us. We would really appreciate it because that also helps us a lot. And that's about it. We hope everyone's having a wonderful summer, and we'll see you at episode 26.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.